Yes, great to have your company this morning. Just running through some basketball results from overnight. The LA Lakers defeated the Indiana Pacers 151-45. Jeez, that was high scoring, wasn't it? A 36-point double-double from Anthony Davis leading the way for the Lakers. Chris Middleton triple-double and a double-double from Giannis Antetokounmpo have led the Milwaukee Bucks to a huge 118-93 win. That was against the West second seed as well in OKC. So that's just a couple of the results on a basketball front. And on a golf front, we did mention yesterday the Valspar Championship on the US PGA Tour. Well, Loz, that was taken out by Peter Malnati, who snapped a 9-year victory drought with a key birdie on the penultimate hole to ultimately claim victory there. It was a pretty emotional win. So
I saw the interview at the end, Benny, and he was holding up his young bloke, and he started tearing up, and then the young bloke looked like he was starting to tear up as well.
Saw his dad cry.
It was great scenes, obviously, because he's had a hard time of it. But to win his second tour game would have been pretty special for him, because I think the last one was, back in 2015 or something like that.
And Dan Ricciardo's in the gun as well on an F1 front, so he's reportedly been handed an ultimatum by Red Bull head honcho Helmut Marko to find some pace over the next two races, or he's going to get axed from Red Bull. So perform or get out seems to be the takeaway from that, and good luck to Dan Ricciardo. We've got Damien Cook joining us, as we do each and every week. I don't get to chat to you too often, Damien. It's great to have you on the show, and I know that, you know, there's going to be some tough questions from the lads over the next sort of 5 to 10 minutes. I can't help but wonder, is it about now you start to regret agreeing to a contract to come onto this show once a week throughout the course of the season?
Hey, guys. It's good to be back on. I caught off the bench to get on a Tuesday, so thanks for having me on early in the week. It has been a tough start to the season. No doubt, you know, winning as Loz will tell you, and winning fixes everything. And at the moment, just getting that first one out of the way would have been really good on the weekend against the Roosters, especially against the Roosters. But it ended up being probably our worst performance of the year. So we had a good review, really good review on the weekend, and put it to bed really early. And we know what direction we've got to work through and work in, and it comes down to just working a lot harder at training and working harder for each other.
Yeah, Cookie, a lot of people have got different theories on why South aren't playing well and why you're not winning games. I want to ask you just a couple of things. All the right messages are coming out of South about being united, and all the messages are, we're all together, we're behind the coach, we're not far off our best. What gives you the confidence that you can bring the best on the weekend? Because what we're seeing at the moment, I think you're a long way from your best.
Yeah, what we looked at on the weekend, what's probably been disappointing is, you know, not the losses, but the points, especially on the weekend, that we let in. And we put that down to, you know, there's a lot of kick tries we've had an issue with over the first three games. There's been a lot of effort put in places. But, you know, just at those small moments when, you know, on the weekend, obviously everyone that watched the game would notice that, you know, Roosters just look like they wanted the ball more. And there's going to be games like that sometimes, but, there shouldn't have been against those guys. And that's probably where we let ourselves down, let our teammates down. It's just at certain moments when the ball's in the air, we just need to work a bit harder and want it more. And, the likes of the Teddy, the way he scored that try was a good example of it. So for us, you just have to look around the change rooms and realise the talent that we have. And I guess that's why we're getting a lot of outside noise, expecting a lot more of us because we do have a great side here. So for us, we spoke about, maybe we had a really good pre-season, but since, you know, we've both been back here, especially from the States and that, maybe we've just been, you know, trying to maintain sort of stand, not work harder and fix what we need to fix. So that's what we've done this week. And, no doubt, every time we go out and put that jersey on, everyone wants to play for that jersey and they want to win. We're not going out there to lose, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So, no doubt, I'd like to think yesterday we had a really good session. We trained really hard and that's what we're going to continue to do and keep trusting you know, the processes that we put in place in pre-season.
Cookie, what changes from your senior players? And I know you're a part of that. As frustrating as I'm sure, well, I'll say it for you, that you started on the bench. Loz and I spoke about that this morning and think they got that wrong. But what is the role of the senior players this week leading up to this game? Because I think in any team, when you go through a period like this, the young players are looking to someone, and the senior players know this is part of your responsibility. So what changes this week for a lot of you boys? Because you've got a number of brilliant senior players that have I'm sure been in situations like this before.
Yeah. To be honest with the bench thing, it was more to manage myself. To be honest, I know there's a lot of noise come out about a lot of things, but it was just with the prep that I had leading into round one and stuff like that. So, knowing that was going to be a big game, we tried a certain game plan, and you know, we'll probably look to go back to normal, you know, this weekend. But for our senior player, we're the ones that like exactly what leaders do and lead the way. We're going to be out there. We're going to be the best on ground this weekend. And I think, you know, especially when it comes to effort, we're going to look like we're you know, definitely supporting each other on the field, whatever everyone does, and then definitely backing each other up and putting in, you know, the best performances and leading the way for our team. So. For those five that are in that group, that's what we have to do this week.
We get a lot of messages about Latrell and Cody particularly, and I guess because of what, you know, the perception and stuff that's been said in the past around they control the team and no one tells them what to do and blah, 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 which, again, right or wrong, it could be completely different perception versus reality. Who does, though? If, let's say, Latrell's not playing as well as you would like, or Cody's not playing as well as you'd like, who does have that tough conversation with, you know, two superstars of the game? Who has the courage to do that? And is there that ultimate respect for your coach particularly that he's got the freedom to do that inside your four walls?
Yeah, definitely. It comes from the coach and the other senior players. Mm. And, you know, we meet every Monday before the start of every week and go through a bit of a debrief of what we liked on the weekend, what we didn't like, what we liked on and off the field at training as well. So that all comes down to pretty much every Monday morning that we go through that. And, you know, Cody's our, you know, I know he wears a six, but, you know, he's our guy who runs the attack and has for a long time. And so, but at the moment, when there's not much, you know, we're not holding on to the ball. We're making silly errors. Like last week, we struggled to get to fifth tackle in good ball. There was opportunities where two times where we could have scored crucial tries that would have eased the, you know, the scoreboard pressure. Next thing you know, we're losing in the play the ball. So it's got to come down to individuals and everyone holding each other accountable as well, and everyone looking after, you know, their own little mistakes as well and owning up to that. So that's what we've done. It just can't come down to, you know, two guys that normally finish off every play for us. We've got to give them an opportunity to play off the back of. So I think that's where everyone as a team's got to be better. And that's all at the moment, ever across the board in what we're doing. We just have to be better in everything we do.
Yeah, and some of those errors you're making are very simple errors too, which shouldn't be occurring. But one thing, me as a watcher, I look at South and I'm watching them, and I think one thing that needs to improve is just the way you start and go after a game in defence.
Yeah.
And you've got to be hungry at that part of the game first. And I think what I've always found is if you get that right, I think the other stuff naturally just flows on. But if you're trying to get your plays on and be not fancy, but just get your rhythm with the football first, I think sometimes that can backfire. And I think when you're under pressure, you've got to go back to starting with the way and how you defend.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And we spoke about that a little bit yesterday, about just how much of the game, of that 80 minutes, the ball's actually in your hands individually and as a team, and then how much is in on defence. But the rest comes down to effort across the field. So you're probably right, like focusing too much on the attack. And then, you know, when we're getting a bit behind on score and we're looking for that win too, we probably get a bit frustrated and anxious how we play as well. So, you know, like I said, if we won on the weekend, this week would be a whole different story. They're probably talking about, you know, South beating a quality Roosters side and back on track. But, you know, so that's where we do have to pull it all back to defence and work harder, especially at the start of the game. You're right. You know, leaking some points at the start and putting that ball pressure on straight away. But, you know, that's where we're definitely got to start better in that sense and then earn the right to attack when we get the ball and be patient and be willing to go set for set with those teams. But at the moment, when we have those silly errors in the ruck that, you know, individuals are making and stuff like that, that don't normally happen when the team's humming along, you know, that just, it all piles on one after the other.
Yeah. Well, you get a great opportunity this Friday to prove the doubters wrong, taking on a Bulldog side who had their best victory of the season last weekend against the Tigers. They defended really well. They started to get things happening with the ball. Now, you've had a good record against them over the last couple of years on that Good Friday match. So, you know, what have you looked at from them that you see that might be of concern to you?
Yeah, we've been... Good Friday is always a great occasion. I think it's very busy out there, and everyone get a really good crowd out of there. So, and it's normally a really good game as well, respective of where anyone's been on the ladder at the time. You know, but now I went and actually watched them. I was out at the Sharks Bulldogs game 2 weeks ago and watched them. They're playing a great brand of footy, especially the way they're looking to lock teams, especially in their, you know, that left-hand corner. They're kicking down and they've got kick out and those boys kick chase and trying to lock them down that corner. They've been quite physical with that. So they're real disciplined with how they do that. And obviously, they've got the likes of Critter there now. He was a big help with getting them out of yardage. So a bit of that class on that edge is definitely probably picked up where the Bulldogs were last year. But they're playing with a lot of confidence with the ball as well. So, you know, I thought they were a good chance to beat the Sharks that day. So, obviously lost probably in the last 30 minutes and then they had a good win on the weekend. So, their momentum's definitely building and ours needs to start. So, it should be one hell of a game. But like you said, it's got to come back to our focus of, you know, D-ing up first and being disciplined with the ball and earning the right. We know we've got the points in us. That's for sure. You look across our team, we know we've got some good attacking players. So, that's where the focus has got to be for us this week. It's just being more physical and wanting it more and want to go out there and show it.
As you well know, the Rabbits have a remarkable Good Friday record, 5 straight against the Bulldogs on Good Friday. Best of luck, and we hope you can make it 6.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Good on you, Cookie.
Great to have your company on the Big Sports Brekkie this morning, just running through a couple of the other results that I haven't touched on just yet. I did mention the basketball with the LA Lakers defeating the Pacers 150-45, and the other one that we touched on was the Bucks 118-93 against OKC. But yesterday it was remiss of me not to discuss Mitchell Starc's debut, his IPL debut. $4.4 million to KKR.
Wow.
Hit for 26 runs in a single over and finished for none for 53 off 4 overs. He's one of the greats.
Wow.
Mitch Starc. But 4.4 mil, he might have hoped for a more positive. A
bit of rust out of the system. He'd be good to go game 2.
I mean, he can go for a few, Starkey, but he's your wicket taker.
Yeah.
He wasn't.
Conditions over there as well. If there's no swing, sometimes the faster you bowl, the easier it is as a batsman because you can use the pace. And Starkey would be bowling to a lot of right-handers, angle across, which just allows the batsman to free their hands, hit through the line, use his pace. Very hard to defend that. But don't get me wrong, conditions will change. Like there's 7:30 p.m. starts. Some grounds will have more dew than others, certainly as we get into the season. He'll start swinging that ball. And again, I like that we're reporting that. Let's just make sure we report when he picks up 5 for and KKR in the final and Mitchell Starc wins in the game in the last over. And
that's, we will.
He's a match winner.
And we will, for that matter.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what you get. I think Starkey's probably the most spoken about fast bowler in regards to half the population thinks he shouldn't be playing Test cricket. The other half think he's an absolute genius. And without him, Tail would make an extra 150 runs. At which start, he knocks the tail over better than anyone.
He does, but he also has a remarkable first wicket record.
Yep.
He breaks the opening partnership more often than not.
Mitchell Starc bowls more balls in his first over. More balls are going to hit the stumps than any other bowler I've ever played with. He bowls that full in-swinging straight at the peg. So if a batsman thinks he's just going to work his way into the first over, even in a test match, Starkey will knock your front leg off or knock your middle stump out. But when conditions aren't conducive or when he's off, it can be, you know, he can go for a lot of runs, but he's an X factor and he's a wicket taker. So I can understand why the IPL have paid or KKR have paid so much money for him. But yes, of course, you're getting paid that. There's high expectation. You've got to perform.
I reckon he would be up there, if not the best, in terms of if you looked at all his wickets, good balls getting wickets, great balls getting wickets, he'd be up there.
Yeah.
Because some of the balls that he bowls to, if you just pick these best ones, mate, they're unplayable.
Yep. Unplayable. And bowled an LB, he'd probably have more than...
Yeah, I reckon Glenn he'd have more than most.
Glenn McGrath used to nick batters off for fun.
But in terms of movement and swing and everything like that, he would his highlight rule would be out of this world.
Yep.
But I think part of the reason he's much maligned is one of his main wicket-taking deliveries. So batsmen are so scared about the left arm tailing in to the right-hander for the LBW and the bowls, and they're the uglier dismissals, that they're waiting for the full and wide one. They get the cross seam full wide, goes across them, nicks straight off to first slip or whatever, and it looks like a pie that they've nicked off. Oh, how did they not put that through covers? But it is... It's strategic. He wants them to be playing that loose shot.
Well, that's what happens as a batsman. Generally, it's not the ball you get out to that gets you out. That's why I say, again, we're talking about head knock. So you can't ban short pitch bowling in cricket. It is needed because generally if a good fast bowler uses a bouncer the right way, the batsman in your mind, you now know, I can't just rock onto the front foot. He's pushed me back. He's bowled 140 Ks. It's quick. I could get it off the glove. So now I'm just sitting in my crease a little bit. The next ball is just a good length delivery, but because I don't go all the way forward, I take a little step forward. That's the ball I nick. Now I'm out. Mm-hmm. That's generally what happens with Starkey. The most dangerous ball is full in-swing bowled LB. So you plan for that. When it doesn't happen and it just angles straight across, your feet go nowhere, push at the line. That's when you nick that ball. That's the advantage of a left-arm bowler to a right-handed batsman.
I think we've discussed this before, but a left-armer to a right-hander...
Yes.
In your opinion...
Yes, hardest.
Hardest?
Hardest. Because, again, it's the angle. So I think as a right-handed batsman, there's a little... You have a little black spot, a little area where... I don't know. It's hard to keep your front foot inside the line of the ball. So if it comes middle leg stump, it's hard to get that foot inside it. So what you generally do at best, you get your foot to the line, but if you don't get the length right, you can nick that ball. The angle as a right-handed batsman for a left arm, you see the line. It's going off stump or it's going towards first slip. So you line that shot up, but then it swings back. You get your front leg in the way, you're out LBW. You miss your front leg, you get bowled. So even bounces for a left-hander are more awkward because they're in at your ribs. That's that little black spot you can't move, that area that you just sort of freeze or you got to cop it in the ribs, you got to cop it in the glove. It cramps you because there's a little area there.
Great to have your company here on the Big Sports Breakfast. Laurie Daly, Michael Clark and Ben Way with you this morning. Lots to discuss. There is some sad news as well, and I did mention just before we caught up on the news, Australian Rugby League Commission Chairman Peter Volandis did pay tribute to a legend of rugby league media, that being Ian Heads, who died this morning following a long illness. And we certainly pass on our sympathies to his entire family and friends and his contribution, by the sounds of it, to the sport of rugby league in particular, but to the media fraternity, was sizable. And as a result, Peter Volandis paying tribute to him. We've gone through a lot of the other rugby league discussion points throughout the course of the morning, and we're going to chat a little bit of AFL soon. The AFL is considering appointing independent doctors at all AFL games to assist the club medical staff in identifying and assessing players for potential head injuries. Now, this is a topic that's been discussed for, a couple of seasons now, because no one wants to question the integrity of club medicos to assess a brain injury. They love the players more than anyone. They know them better than anyone. They can do the testing better than anyone. That said, there is a feeling externally that there is pressure to get players back out there. Now, there's not one club doctor that I know that would ever do that.
Yeah.
but it is a look. And I know in particular with Port Adelaide, it was a huge discussion point last year in the AFL. I think at bare minimum for optics, independent doctors would be a better look. What do you think?
Well, I think if you're going to do that, there's no point having a club doctor.
Well, they can tend to other things that aren't HIAs.
Man, come on. I think you've just got to... I understand the perception, but I think you've got to back the doctor in this situation. I think if you understand... And you just, you know, reading the room where we are today. We've had a conversation for hours this morning about, you know, a number of injuries over the past weekend where... You know, if you're the team doctor and you're seeing your player concussed, you're not sending back out to bat. You're not sending back. Like, no. I feel like you've got to... There's got to be some sort of trust left in the world, isn't there? Like, come on.
There is, but we have seen some glaring
Okay, well, just make a bigger fine. Make it like, if you're willing to do that, then the doctor will be banned for... I don't know, 6 games. The doctor will be fined $100,000. Like, I don't, like, you just, I feel like because there's any sort of, you know, the wrong look, well, sometimes we might think the player's not okay, but medically he is. Like, look at the, who's the young batsman for Victoria? He's had so many head knocks. Pogoski, Will. Yeah, yeah. Will, great young man, wonderful player. So, right now, there's so much talk around. I've heard so many people say, mate, his career's over, got to stop. Well, hang on. The people saying that are not experts. You are not a qualified doctor to make that decision. Have an opinion, do what you got to do, but at the moment, he's in the hands of expertise. We have to back that expertise. And I'd like to hope, in a role like a team doctor, particularly, that they are making the best decision for that individual player. And there is, I think now, if you are caught putting pressure on your team doctor to send them back out when they shouldn't be out there, mate, I reckon the consequences will be severe. So I think, I don't know, I'm glass half full. I want to back the doctor who will make the right decision. I don't want to take that part of his job away. And what's the point of allowing him that role if you're going to, mate, he's not doing the right thing for the player. I think that's a big call. I don't think that's fair.
Hey, Loz, I mentioned as we just returned from the break in regards to Ian Head's passing away, and forgive me, I did reference this morning. Obviously, yesterday morning that news came through. Can we just maybe get a story from you? I'm sure that you dealt with him over the years. I don't know whether you were particularly close, but I'm sure given his work over a long time and given your standing in the game, you had a bit to do with each other.
Yeah, I knew Ian. Highly regarded, highly respected journalist. A wonderful man that contributed a lot to the game. Great historian. Recount plenty of things that happened in the game. Worked for a number of organisations. He had a deep love for the game and a passion for it, and his knowledge was first class. And he was honoured, I think, a few years ago in the Hall of Fame, and rightly deserved to be in it. He was a special man that a lot of people knew that played the game, that worked with him, but also players that played the game. They had a great relationship with him, and he was someone that was highly respected and did a wonderful job. And he'll be sadly missed by, obviously, the family, but his legacy will be there forever.
Another little bit of news, well said, by the way, another little bit of news that we probably haven't mentioned thus far this morning was Wayne Bennett and the Dolphins. So looking set to hand Isaiah Katoa a 3-year contract extension. The chat, it's reported around $2 million to retain his services. How do you see that?
Yeah,
deal?
Good player. Good young player. Got his opportunity in first grade last year, and I think he handled himself really well. He's a guy that will improve, and Wayne Bennett didn't take long to pull the trigger. What he did was, Sean O'Sullivan didn't play well in game one, and then Bennett decided that next game, I need to make some changes here, and they played accordingly against the Dragons. But young Katoa, he's highly touted, highly rated by a lot of people, and I think he's got a massive future in the game. And as we know, halfbacks are hard to come by, and they take time to mature. And this young man, if he's given some time, I think he'll develop into a really nice player for the Dolphins. He'll be a 10, 12-year player if he's injury-free.
Still got a stack of guests coming up. James Jordan, the Sydney Swans midfielder, is going to join us in an hour or so's time. Brad Davidson, the Sky Racing form analyst, will be here. Danny Widler, Jared Daffy is about to join us, though, because there is a lot to discuss. We've got so much sport coming up. NRL games Thursday, Friday. We've got the overall premiership market open. AFL, Socceroos are on tonight. NBA games, anything you want to bet on, there is an opportunity to do so. Head to tab.com.au or get the Tab app out. Daff, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Ben. Good morning to you all.
Hey, I'm looking forward to the footy this weekend, and I'm sure plenty of punters are as well. Run through the markets for us.
Well, there's been some massive changes on the back of that, or two pieces of large news that got out yesterday. Now, beforehand, the Roosters were $2.65. They're now $1.70 to beat Penrith, who are out to $2.15. Friday night, Souths are quite popular at $1.48. The Bulldogs, $2.65, a line of 6.5 points. The Broncos are on the drift. They were $2.05 yesterday. They're out to $2.10. The Cowboys, $1.74. St. George Illawarra, not much movement here. $3.10. Manly, $1.35, 8.5. Gold Coast are on the drift. $2.10 out to $2.15. The Dolphins, $1.70. The Warriors, $1.47. The Knights at $2.65, 6.5. No real movement in Cronulla v. Canberra. Cronulla 152, Canberra 255. That line is 5.5 points. And obviously the Parramatta price changed rather dramatically. Ben, $1.27 beforehand. Mitch Moses was ruled out. $1.50 now. The Tigers, $3.80 into $2.60 in a line there of 6.5 points. So it's moved half a dozen points as well.
What about the premiership odds, Daff?
Well, Clarky, we had Penrith into $3.50 yesterday, obviously, with Nathan Cleary out for a little while. They've eased out to $3.65, but since the weekend, they were the side that everybody wanted to be on. I guess that'll dry up today. The Broncos are $5, no real interest there. The Roosters are the team that most want to be with there at $6. Melbourne, $9. Cowboys, $13. Manly, $15. Para, $17. The Warriors, $19. And then out to $23 for South now.
In the AFL this weekend, Daff, who we got on third? Oh, we got Brisbane and Collingwood. Jeez, big game for both these clubs, isn't it?
This is a big one. Well, you'd think if Collingwood lose, and the prices say they should, they're $3.10 outsiders. They're $1.70 to make the eight. That would make them, 0-4? And they'll be black figures to make the eight next week if they lose this week. It's quite incredible. Anyway, $3.10. Brisbane, who haven't been much better, they're yet to get a win there, $1.38. Big line there of 16.5 points in favour of them. Most of the early interest has been in the lines. We've got a lot of shorties. North Melbourne on the first match on Friday, +36 into +33 against Carlton. They're $5.80 to win Carlton, $1.14. The Bulldogs take on the West Coast. Bulldogs $1.05, West Coast $10. That line's creeping out a little bit. Now -48.5 points. Richmond take on the Swans. That's a bit of a daunting task. They're $3.60 to win. They +23 has gone though. That's +20. Sydney $1.29. And in the match on Monday, Hawthorn $3.30 to beat Geelong at $1.34. But again, that line, that plus line for Hawthorn has come in a little bit, +20 into +18. As far as the flag is concerned, well, it's dominated by Sydney sides. GWS $5, Sydney $6. Then Melbourne $8, Carlton $8, Brisbane $9. Port are into single figures, they're $9, Collingwood $13. Geelong 15, and then out to 26 or better for the rest.
I know you don't care about Collingwood because you're a Carlton supporter, but what's the gossip on them, mate? Why are they
Nobody
struggling?
Can work it out. The Dacos are still getting the ball, but when they get it, it doesn't seem to go anywhere. Nobody has been able to pinpoint it. Which is quite strange, but is it an advantage? Well, it's no advantage to come north and take on Brisbane this week. The only thing that might keep them congested points-wise is bad weather around for most of the week. But Brisbane haven't been a whole lot better either. So it's a season-defining match for Collingwood. If they lose, well, it's curtains, surely.
What about the Socceroos tonight, buddy, against Lebanon?
Pretty sure here, Clarkey. $1.18. We've got a draw at $6 and Lebanon at $17. The correct score is where we always see a lot of interest when we've got a short price favourite. And the favourite way home there is the Aussies to win 2-0 at 4.75, ahead of 3-0 at 5. 1-0 did open at $8, it's into 6, and then out to 4-0 at $8.50. So there's plenty of markets there on that match tonight, which will be played in Canberra.
And I'm sure we've got plenty of NBA today, have we?
Well, you'd be right there. There's a heap of them. And a lot of short price favourites today, so I'm tipping multis are going to be hugely popular today. Brooklyn hosts Chicago. Brooklyn $1.48 into $1.39. That line has moved a couple of points. It's now 7. Houston were $1.22 against Portland, $4.50, and that line was 9. Well, it's moved 4 points. They're $1.13 now. The Rockets, $6.50, Portland, and that line, 13 points. And the final match for the day is always our most popular. There's no real movement there yet. The Clippers, $1.46. Indiana, $2.80, and a line of 5.5 points.
All right, Daff, anything else for us to go through before we say goodbye?
We've got that Tim Zhu fight on at the weekend. Have you boys seen his opponent?
Yes.
Yeah, he's quite
tall, is he?
Yeah.
He's 6'6".
Yeah,
anyway, Tim Zhu's $1.20. At the moment, that's all we've got up. The head-to-head, $1.20 and $4.60. So we'll populate that with a few more markets for the week. But a big weekend coming up. And, of course, we've got all the racing on Saturday, Benny. We've got the all-in markets there at the moment. Over the next 24 hours or so, those fields will be finalised. But what a massive weekend.
Absolutely. For those who think that Slipper Day was the grand final, I can assure you, with the championships not too far around the corner, the good racing just keeps on going each and every week. Thanks very much, Daff.
Thanks, guys.
Great to have your company this morning on the Big Sports Brekkie. Quite a few texts coming through in regards to that HIA news. So
for those who missed it, there are some good points.
Yeah. So for those who missed it, the AFL is considering appointing independent doctors at all AFL games to assist the club medical staff in identifying and assessing players for potential head injuries. Michael was quite strong in saying, no, we need to back the club doctors in. They're not going to send players out there if they're in trouble, suffering concussion, showing ill effects.
But a couple of the messages that have come through, I think, make really good points. You know, are the doctors specialised in head knocks, for example? If they're not, then I can understand there is definitely a benefit than having someone on the ground that does specialise in that. And the other point, the other message that comes through that I think is important as well, what if there's more than one injury at that time? So what if somebody's done a hamstring, the doctor's got to worry about that, and then there's a head knock in the same set of six, for example, in rugby league. What's the, like, you can only do one job at once.
Yeah,
I
think they've got, well, you've got independent doctor there, but you also, some teams will carry two, or the physio will treat the guy with the hamstring, and then the doctor deals with the head knock.
Yeah. But in the NRL, for example, are all doctors
aligned to a club, and then you have the independent doctor looking at it on review?
Yeah, I'm just saying, with the actual team doctor, do they have expertise, for example, in head knocks?
Well, they're probably not neurologists.
Yeah.
But some might. I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah,
but generally speaking, they're sports doctors.
So is it important to have...
So they treat sports injuries and
But then in the NRL, you have a specialist, a independent doctor that does specialise in that, I'm assuming.
I'd say they would.
Okay, so you can understand the benefit of having that person there as well.
But I think with the testing that they do, it's done clear before, and there's symptoms for category 1, 2, and 3. I'm assuming if you're a
team doctor, you
know whether someone, because you're working with them all the time, is not responding to what you need them to do. And so they've got that SCAT test, which they have to do. And if they don't do that in a certain amount of time, well,
so what do you think of the independent doctor? Do you think the AFL should bring that in? Do you like it in league, or would you rather...
I can understand why people are sceptical, but the doctors are qualified, and I don't think they'd be putting their reputation on the line.
That's what I think. Not these days.
With litigation just around the corner, with you sending someone back out to play,
that's what I think.
If you knowingly know that they're not 100% right, mate, good luck doing that.
Do you think there is pressure, spoken or unspoken, from coaches
and club staff? Not anymore.
I think the risk is too high now, Benny.
I'll tell you what coaches do. Coaches, they'll get an update on how the player is travelling, but they wouldn't be ringing up and telling the doctor down in the shed, listen, get him back out there.
No way in the world. I reckon those days are long gone.
But say...
No pressure at all. No.
I don't think
so.
No.
Nathan Cleary, first 5 minutes of a grand final, gets a head knock.
Yep.
There's no call to say, is he definitely concussed?
Well, if he doesn't pass the test,
there's no conversation.
Yeah. Like, we had John Orchard, who was Roosters... doctor
for a long time, state of origin doctor.
He was Australian cricket doctor when I was playing, when I was captain. And I'm mate, I could have told Orch whatever I wanted. If I got hit and he thought I was not okay to bat, he would have dragged me off the field. Like, you couldn't, he knew. That was his job, that's his reputation, that's his livelihood. He would never, no matter what you begged or asked. And that was years gone, but I reckon these days the consequences are even higher now.
Higher.
You couldn't do it. You'd end up in court. Yeah. If a coach did that and made the doctor, or even tried to persuade the doctor, mate, you'd be sitting in a courtroom these days.
Well, if you did make that call as a coach, and you put pressure on the doctor, and the doctor relented and put him back on, and something seriously happened.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. No way in the world would they do that anymore.
Brad Davidson is now joining us. A bit of a change of tact here. The Sky Racing form analyst who apparently had an absolute day out on Saturday. So hats off, Davo. Well played to you. And Via Sestina made an absolute statement. One thing that became clear, mate, and I did see you echo these sentiments on Twitter over the weekend. When it gets over a trip, unfortunately, the visitors are superior.
That's right, Benny. Yeah, good morning, guys. Yeah, look, she was simply superb there on Saturday. I think, you know, think it over is probably sort of, you know, our benchmark in that sort of middle distance range. And you got a very soft lead and seemed to have sort of every possible chance there on the weekend. But these internationals, when it comes to these middle distance trips, they are just superior. It's as simple as that. And I think if they went at a quicker tempo there on Saturday in the Rambert, she would have won by 3 and 4 lengths. So the win had more merit than the margin, considering they absolutely crawled and it was just basically a 400-metre sprint home. So to do what she did was phenomenal, and all systems go towards the Queen Elizabeth in a few weeks' time.
Great performance with Lady of Camelot on the weekend, winning the Golden Slipper Davo. I want to ask you, not only about her performance, but who do you see the best horse out of that Golden Slipper moving forward?
Yeah, well, look, she was terrific, wasn't she? High pressure, 1,200 metres was no issue for her. There was whispers all week that she was flying, and she was simply too good on the day. Coleman was good. Storm Boy, look, a lot made about him missing the start, but he does that every start. I thought he had his chance. The inside of the track might have been a little bit inferior, but I thought he had every possible, guys. I didn't think that, you know, if he jumped with them, he would have won the race. But, yeah, I thought he probably... I'm not sure whether he... You know, we'll find out whether that Magic Millions was just a day where everything went right. Or, you know, we'll find out when he gets to 14 and 1600. He's probably still the horse I'd take out of the race, Loz, just simply because he does look like a horse that's going to really appreciate that extra trip. But, look, he has had a busy preparation all the same. He basically hasn't had a break the whole way through since Magic Millions. So... Yeah, that's got to be a little question as well, how much is left in the tank. But, yeah, if you ask me which horse I'd sort of take forward, it's probably still him. But, look, Lady of Camelot, too good. Coleman was outstanding. And even horses like Manal hit the line really well from the back.
Kieran McAvoy and his fall in the last, it kind of, sat the oxygen out of the place. I don't think I've seen racegoers as concerned as they were there on the last.
A really nasty one, wasn't it, Ben? Obviously, sadly, we lost Tin Tookie there. And, you know, our thoughts go out to the connections of that horse. And of course, the horse herself and Kieran McAvoy, a spinal fracture there. So he'll be on the sidelines for a few months. But, you know, pretty bad injury. But it could have been worse. It was a real, real nasty fall. And, we wish Kieran the best in his recovery, and hope to see him back at the track sooner rather than later.
I reckon I know one of the horses we can follow into the autumn, Davo, but who are some that you would want to follow? Because I think Via Sestina would be one, wouldn't it?
Yeah, look, she just looks to have a real grip on that Queen Elizabeth in a few weeks' time now. That was, some win there. And if she gets a bit more of a high-pressure race, look out. She's got that turn of speed and And it wasn't even really a wet track there on Saturday, and by all reports, she's even better on wet ground. So she'd be one to follow out of the meeting. I thought Sunshine in Paris was probably the other horse to take out. But she was terrific in the Galaxy, hitting the line really hard, and sets up beautifully for her campaign.
Any second chances or no second chances for a few of them?
Yeah, look, there's a few forgive there from the weekend. Derry Grove, unfortunately, bled, so he'll have that three-month ban. Baranoff pulled up with cardiac arrhythmia and osmosis. I think I want to see him again. He just blew the start badly there in the Galaxy. He did drift like the wind, though. But, when they miss the start that badly, you just got to see them, see what they can produce next time around.
Okay, so any that are in the bin?
Yeah, look, I think Alencia, she's... you know, she was luckless first up, sure, but that seemed to be her race there on Saturday, and she was a bit disappointing for mine. So just not getting the job done at the moment, and happy to sort of, you know, be around her at the short odds going forward at this stage.
Davo, you sound a little flat today. Are you okay?
Yeah, all good, guys. All good.
You need me to pop over for a cuddle, you let me know.
Nah, looking forward to another big week of racing ahead, and yeah, the group one continue to roll on.
Love you, mate. And the Kelsonator. See you soon.
There you go.